Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Well, Mr. Pfeiffer.
As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left.
Who are those kids, rejects from hell?
No. The kids with high IQs and low grades. All you gotta do is get their attention.
Once a Marine, always a Marine. Most of my students don't even know what a verb is. You want to pass, all you have to do is try.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pfeiffer Fridays, where we walk you through the films of one Michelle Pfeiffer, and every F word automatically has a silent P. I'm Michael McLean.
And I'm Jerry Downey.
And today we are covering 1995's Dangerous Minds, starring Wade Dominguez, Renoli Santiago, Adina Harris, George Zunza, Courtney B. Vance, Robin Bartlett, and of course, La Pfeiffer as Luann Johnson. And now, Jerry, you've seen this before.
I did. This was my second watch of this one. This is, we're having a nice little run of my Michelle Pfeiffer marathon from a year ago.
Yeah.
And this was another one of those. If I'm remembering correctly, I think I did like a solid triple feature one night and did this One Fine Day and Thousand Acres in one night. That feels right to me.
Kind of a mashup of titles.
It's and what a variety of films.
I know.
But yeah, this was my second watch for this. Quality. Yeah. So much to choose from.
I'd never seen this before. I think I'd heard of this. For some reason, I get it. The title is so similar to, like, I think there's that TV show Criminal Minds.
Yes.
So for some reason, I got it equated with, you know, Criminal Minds, Dangerous Minds. So I thought for sure, oh yeah, she's like a hard-boiled detective or like a cop, like a no-nonsense cop. Because the poster, you'll see if you go on IMDb, she's like, her arms are crossed in her leather jacket. No nonsense, not putting up with anybody's shit. So you think, well, she's clearly a woman on a mission to solve a crime, not to, you know, help out these underprivileged kids.
Okay, do you have as strong a memory as I do of this poster art when you were a kid?
No, I don't. I don't think I ever saw it as a kid.
Okay. It must just have been around that time when we were going to the video store a lot. Mm-hmm. Because I vividly remember this poster. So, you know, came out in 95, so probably was in stores in 96. So I was 8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At that point. And I just remember this poster so vividly. Long before I knew who Michelle Pfeiffer was.
Okay.
Just knew that this was a Michelle Pfeiffer movie because of this poster. If you think back on a lot of the posters of her films, I don't think there's another one quite like this where she is just dead center, like, this is Michelle Pfeiffer's movie.
Yeah, where she's not flanked by anybody else.
Right.
Where it is really is she is taking up that whole poster. Yeah. No, I can think of others, but no, it's, they're always Baker Boys, you know, Batman. She's there, but she's kind of flanked by her co-stars.
Right. She's one of a trio because Liaisons is the same way.
Yeah. So yes, this poster for you is almost like What Lies Beneath or White Oleander was for me a blockbuster.
Yeah, very much so.
I guess this is, I have a whole, I realize I'm like, oh, I have a whole dissertation about this type of movie. The white savior teacher, you know. And that is what this movie is, I guess. You know, she, the detail about this movie that I think is so interesting is that this is a real woman, Luann Johnson.
Yes.
And I believe she wrote a book on her experience teaching this they call it like the academy class at the school she goes, she gets the job at. I guess how, I mean, to me, it almost seems like she's teaching on-level English. That's how I always thought of it. It's not an honors class. It's just, she's an on-level English course. And she's an ex-Marine. And I think that is such an interesting detail that I feel like gets touched on at the beginning of the movie, but is it really ever touched on again as the movie goes on? I feel like it's like such an interesting detail, but it's like, okay, well, that never really ever gets mentioned again.
No, you sort of expect, because it is treated with such deference and such importance when it's mentioned the first time, like it's a fairly, or feels like it's a fairly big plot point.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of expect that maybe this is going to turn into, she has to use Marine tactics or Marine mentality to get this class into shape.
Yeah.
And aside from sort of, I don't even know what the word is, hooking them with karate.
Yeah, kind of breaking the ice.
Right.
Yeah.
You really don't, none of the tactics she uses seem like they're from the Marines. I mean, I don't, you know, most, all I know from the Marines are what we see in movies, and I don't remember candy bars and A Few Good Men. So, you know.
No. And I think I was the same way. I was like, oh, she's going to use these, like they have military tactics to whip this class into shape. And I, even from the poster, you think, okay, she's taken no prisoners. And I don't think she does in the classroom. She definitely is very, she knows her way around. I think of it, it's, you know, she doesn't let a lot faze her. I think when she takes things personally, it's for the right reasons, but I don't think it really ever gets too personal for her in the classroom. Does that make sense? It just feels like when I was watching her in this, certain things, you know, like when they, if any of the kids would like, you know, like drop an F-bomb or something, or, you know, Emilio in the first part, those first few scenes, really almost seems like he's flirting with her. She doesn't really let it like phase her. It's that kind of thing where she doesn't let their barbs, their jabs at her really catch. She just kind of moves on through. I think that's what I mean by not taking it personally.
Sure, I would agree with that.
But yeah, I think I expected, you know, the Marine portion to be more in play, and maybe in her book it is, where she talks about her experiences with that. But to me, this is pretty, you know, generic student-teacher dynamic kind of movie. I think with a lot of these movies, you expect them now to have a extraordinary quality about them, you know, like with you know, with Meryl Streep, when she did Music of the Heart, doesn't she teach those kids violin? The always charmless Hilary Swank, you know, she in Freedom Writers, she makes a book out of all these journals that she makes these kids write.
See, I think it's interesting that your mind went forward and mine went backward, because when I watch this movie, I think of Lean on Me and Stand and Deliver and sort of these movies that predated it, which are also, at least Lean on Me, I'm fairly sure, is also based on a true school, a true experience. And I agree with you, like, certainly in a 2021 lens, this is a white savior movie. Mm-hmm. But I also think that this was made before that was really a thing, which I guess is why my mind sort of goes in that backward direction of what came before it. But then again, you know, those teachers were Morgan Freeman and Lou Diamond Phillips and not white lady Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah. I don't think it's, I guess, yeah, in a 2021 lens, it is a white savior movie, but I don't think it leans too hard on those typical white savior tropes that we would see.
It doesn't, because my personal definition of white savior movies has always been white person solves racism.
Yeah, and that's not what this is about.
Right, that's not this.
No. to me, what Luann does in that classroom, while it's maybe not as earth-shattering as, you know, teaching an instrument or making a book or anything like that, I think it's still pretty powerful. What she is insinuating is that that knowledge, having knowledge, is its own kind of power out there in the world. As much as your pride, as much as your clout and your reputation, knowledge is powerful in its own right. And having that can still take you places. Instead of, you know, she's not really, I think she is trying to get on these kids' level and understand them and really support them and encourage them to keep going. I'm jumping so far ahead, but it's kind of, as I'm thinking about, like, to keep this point going, it's when she goes to see Lionel and Darrell's mother, because Lionel and Darrell, two students, they've been missing from school for a bit. And she goes to see, goes to their home to see what's going on. And their mother says, you know, I don't really like what you're doing in the classroom. I'm not really raising my boys to be really anything much, you know, for lack of better words. She's not, she doesn't have a lot of expectations for her sons. And this is a Black mother raising Black boys. And Michelle doesn't, there's not a scene of Michelle standing up to this woman or, you know, saying, I think this is what they should be doing. That scene plays out and you don't really hear from them anymore. But I'd almost rather that than her being like, well, I'm going to try to get these boys back in the classroom. Anyway, I'm going to solve this.
Agreed. And I think that scene is very important because it does sort of burst her balloon.
Yeah.
And she takes it on the chin, which is very important. Like you said, it doesn't steer her into making these kids a cause. They're still just her students that she wants to see succeed. But I think having her balloon burst is very important because, again, sort of through a 2021 lens, I'm not even sure if this was the same in 95. She is far too involved in her, in the personal lives of her students outside the classroom. And I think that's the other part of that mom sort of saying that is, you know, the expectations for her sons are that they will get a job, hopefully, and that they will be working. They don't need to graduate high school for that. And they don't need these, they don't need Bob Dylan. They don't need poetry in order to achieve that. So stop fucking with them.
Did I go through the plot? I mean, it's pretty much, there's not much to this plot, really. It's just her, you know, it's just kind of her year in the classroom. I think I could.
Yeah. I mean, that it is one of the most simple synopses we've had yet.
Yes. It's funny, even the situation that she's thrown in is, seems to me such so cut and dried compared to any of these movies that I've seen where I remember thinking, I was like, oh, it's kind of a no-brainer that this curriculum needs a do-over. Like the fact that she realized that she needs to step up and really deliver for these kids. Again, I think I'm used to these movies later, you know, post Dangerous Minds, where I think it takes a little bit for these teachers to realize, oh my gosh, to kind of get over their fear and really kind of figure out the way to get these kids is through a particular means. It seems like Michelle's kind of like, you're making them read this. Oh, you don't care. Okay, and the next day, there's a solution. And yeah, I'm like, okay, I appreciate that, but I was totally not used to seeing how this story is being, you know, darn these years post Dangerous Minds where it's like our brains and how we view these movies have been kind of warped by the Hollywood arc of what these are supposed to, how these stories are supposed to go. But now that I think about it, I kind of appreciate it that she just was like, okay, well, okay, how can I connect to them? Let me get on their level here.
And I think by that token, it's also the fact that she's under a time crunch. Like, I don't know if we're given quite the knowledge, but it feels like she's coming in mid-year.
Yeah.
And rather close, if not very close to graduation. And so once she sets her sights on the fact that she wants to see as many of these kids graduate her class as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's not dicking around. She's going to knock it out.
And that, you know, it's not guaranteed that she's going to be there next year. This is kind of a, she's divorced. She needs a job. So it's, you know, there's, we got to get going here.
Yeah.
A lot of it is so many plot notes, you know, like Courtney B. Vance, hot, until you kind of realize that he ain't doing much to advance these poor kids' lives. It's kind of shitty.
No.
You know, her friend, her kind of ally at the school, such a great friend, you know, for sticking, being on her side, even though I think they were, she was friends with her husband, but now that he's split it off, he's still sticking with Luann and making sure she's got a friend on the inside.
And he's the one that kind of, again, sort of burst her initial bubble, because she, I don't quite like Michelle in the first scene in terms of her performance. It doesn't feel like a very natural fit for her.
Yeah.
It's, and I don't necessarily blame her. I blame the screenplay for kind of making her guileless and almost trying to really play off that line that Robin Bartlett says to her, that you don't look like a Marine. Just like, we get it. She's Michelle Pfeiffer. Like, of course she doesn't look like a Marine.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, she's sort of happy with the job, trots in the classroom and gets this very rude awakening. And her friend is the one that basically says, well, you either get their attention or you quit.
Yeah.
Those are your options.
Yeah. There's really not much coddling.
No.
And again, I think in another movie, we would have seen a very compassionate, you know, friend to the newbie being like, oh, come sit with me at lunch. You know, let's commiserate together. There's really nothing like this.
Or she would have had a love interest or a spouse.
Yeah.
Something like that, someone to complain about when she went home.
Yeah, Hilary Swank had Patrick Dempsey.
Which I did see that Andy Garcia shot scenes as a love interest of hers, and they did not make it into the movie.
I don't need that, you know.
I don't either.
Yeah. And these, I think a lot of the kids in this film, or the kids, the high schoolers, the 37-year-old high schoolers.
Big ol' air quotes.
Yep.
To be fair, they look more like high schoolers than the cast of Grease 2.
True. True.
Just throw a little credit their way.
I'll take that. And, you know, maybe it's because of Grease 2. You know, I had my, we're going back to school. I had that in my head. And like the beginning bus scenes as the kids are getting on the bus.
I mean, why Michelle didn't bust out some reproduction to get their attention is beyond me.
Oh man. And some of those scenes when she's maybe inadvertently making eyes at Emilio.
I don't care for that.
Did you get the sense that there was something that they were trying to insinuate something?
Yes.
Because I didn't want, I was like, I feel what they're catching at, but I don't want that to be the case. So I was going to table this and be like, what do you think about this?
It felt like they were, you knew that button was not going to get pushed, but it also sort of felt like a lazy choice on the screenwriter. Mm-hmm. That was, because to catch everybody up, basically, Emilio is like the leader of this classroom, and she is told by numerous students that if she wants to get the class to pay attention, she has to get Emilio on board first.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I feel like the script kind of puts her in a position of where she feels like flirting with him is her only recourse to get him on board. That's like, he doesn't want the candy. He's going to backtalk her and be like, I'm cool right now. I don't have to answer your damn questions no matter what you tell me. Mm-hmm. And so it almost paints her into a corner when she's dealing with him, that flirtation is the next step, or like the last trick she has in order to possibly get his attention.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. I think it's lazy.
Yeah. And as handsome as Wade Dominguez is, and as much as it's not really for, well, it was like, I was like, you know, if maybe if they had a little kiss, would I hate it? Maybe.
I would. I absolutely would. And I also think it's, you know, sort of to tie back to another teacher movie, I think they tried to, almost as if she didn't have deeper feelings for him, his death wouldn't hit as hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think back to something like Dead Poets Society.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, no, if you're close to your student and you are actively rooting for them to succeed,
yeah,
and you let them crash at your house in order to keep them safe the next morning, they're dead, that's going to impact you.
Yeah.
You don't.
No extra padding needed for that. Back with kind of, because we get three, yeah, I think about like three kind of main kids that are kind of focused on. You have Emilio, Raul, and Callie.
Yes.
And really, to me, it goes to the Michelle's always had fantastic chemistry with most of like the kids or the younger actors, that if she is in a situation where she is a mother teacher to a younger person, she always has really splendid chemistry with them.
Yes.
And with those three main kids that we see, just they're some of my favorite scenes that she gets to have time with them. I don't think she really gets to have a ton of time with Callie, but you know, her dinner scene where she gets to take Raul out to dinner, I think is really sweet.
I was about to say, I do think her scenes with Raul are her strongest.
Mm-hmm.
Although, even though it is very brief, I do like the sort of heart-to-heart she has with Callie at Callie's apartment,
mm-hmm,
where she basically is trying to tell her, you don't have to go to this other school because you're pregnant. You actually can stay in class.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Callie sort of gets defensive about the situation and Michelle just comes right out with it and that her husband beat her and so she left and eventually had an abortion and sort of lays all her cards on the table, which again is getting entirely too personal with your high school students.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. The scenes she has with the students are far and away her strongest sections, I feel. Mm-hmm. When she's one-on-one, I think her one-on-one scenes are much stronger than a lot of the stuff she does in the classroom with all of them.
Okay. There's one classroom scene that I really liked. She has a speech about, you know, I guess it comes down to, you know, you have a choice, you know, you chose to be here. You know, it's kind of, you chose to get on the bus. That scene, I know it's kind of, those kind of classroom scenes all kind of run together at sometimes, but at least one of the standout scenes to me was when she, I only wrote down choose to get on the bus, so I can't think of the speech right now and what she's actually saying. I think she's just saying that, you know, you guys, you may not want to be here, but in a way, you do want to be here because you got out of bed this morning and you came to school. You didn't have to come to school. This isn't technically a requirement. You could go out and do something else. I really enjoyed that speech she gave. That was kind of the one strong classroom scene that I remember.
See, and for some reason, a lot of those more sort of impassioned speeches she has in the classroom just don't land for me like, okay, I would want them to.
Yeah.
And I feel like partially that's the screenplay's fault. I feel like there's a lot of cliche baked into those.
Yeah.
Speeches a good percentage of the time. And then it also feels like when she has those speeches, her dialect hampers her just a little bit more.
Huh.
And I know it's such a fine line between the Southern she's doing here and like the Southern she did for Loreen and Love Field, which I did feel sat very well in her range.
Yeah.
There's something about the dialect she's doing for Luann that sometimes gets away from her, if that, of course, that doesn't make sense. How can a dialect get away from you?
Yeah.
But it's, and it always feels like because her emotions are getting higher in the speech, it somehow makes the dialect more pronounced.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just something about all the mathematics of performance and text and everything else. They just don't quite get there like I would expect them to.
Yeah, it makes, even for this dialect in the film, I noticed it at the beginning, but it wasn't like the register of her voice in The Age of Innocence or her dialect in Love Field. I kind of forgot that she had a dialect in this. Even when you just mentioned it, I was like, oh yeah, she did have an accent, didn't she? Because it's not very pronounced in this movie, but I wonder if that's because it does kind of waver just a little bit more.
That's so funny, because her dialect in this one sticks out to me so hard. That's hilarious.
Yeah, to me, I was just, it didn't register to me that much. And maybe, depending on which part of the South she's from, maybe that just doesn't register for my little Southern ears.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Totally.
Yeah, this one, it's so funny. When you said that, I was like, oh yeah, she did have an accent.
Oh yeah, she was Southern in this one.
Whoops. Well, speaking of the cliche, you'll be that much tougher to knock down. You know, I think it's when she's talking about how knowledge is power. You know, I wrote that down, but that's kind of, you know, that's a cliche. You know, that's a pretty much a, put that on a poster on your wall in the schoolroom.
It's another one of those screenplays where I'm just like, I think y'all coasted a little bit because you had Michelle Pfeiffer to deliver these lines. Because I was looking at quite a bit of the reviews for this movie, and it's amazing how many of the reviewers credit her by saying that she does the best as well as she can. Which I would agree with. I don't think this is a perfect movie. I do think that of all the tech aspects, the screenplay is what makes it suffer the most. But as we've said previously, you get lucky when your screenplay is in Michelle Pfeiffer's hands, because 9 times out of 10, she can at least make it land on some level.
Because even with some of these lines that are pretty cliche stuff, in her mouth, they do sing.
And I guess that's why I like her one-on-one scenes more, is because
she's not relying on those kind of...
Right, and she's able to make that connection with the other person. She's able to play off them, and it just sort of seems to settle.
Yeah.
They're nice moments to just sort of settle into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of my favorite moments when she's out to dinner with Raul, because Raul, Callie, and Darrell?
Yes.
A big thing that Luann does in the movie that we've sort of mentioned, but to help these kids really connect with poetry, instead of giving them something that I'm sure like Walt Whitman or something very old and archaic, she gives them Bob Dylan lyrics, pretty much poetry in my mind as well. So she gives them a challenge of which Dylan Thomas poem sounds as similar to a Bob Dylan lyric. Is that the challenge?
Yes.
And so whoever wins gets to go out to a really fancy restaurant with her for dinner. Because Luann knows that the best way to your kid's heart is through a reward system. And I think that's the best decision she makes, because it always worked for me. If I knew that there was candy or a reward at the end of one of these things, by golly, I was going to participate.
Oh, yeah.
For a Butterfinger? Come on. So Raul is the only student that comes to the dinner because Darrell and Callie have to work. And you find out during the course of this meal that Raul's going to have to skip school for a few days to pay back a guy that he bought this leather jacket from off the street. He's got to pay back his debt. And Michelle, again, overstepping here, footing this student $200 in this jacket, she says, I'll foot you the money so you don't have to skip class. because if you cut school, you know, if you don't pay back this guy, he'll kill you. If you cut school, I'll tell your father and he'll kill you. That's probably my favorite line of hers in the movie.
Yeah, I do like that line delivery.
But yeah, it's that kind of personal stuff where, you know, she's getting a little zinger in there, but she really just makes that connection just really hit home and really just, it's so nice. Just sit and watch that scene with her and a young person.
Yeah.
She really can connect with these. With, she has that really just a great gift of it. She gets really connect with you. Connect with the youths. Because yeah, I don't think many actors, when you watch enough of these mills where you where actors are really having to be with younger people, it's like that's tough to do. It doesn't always come naturally, but yeah. It really comes naturally to her.
Definitely.
Even I think with the, when, because Emilio, one of her favorite students is killed at the end of the film, kind of the emotional climax is the death of the student. I get, can you explain how that happens? It's because Emilio is, he takes up with Angela, who's I guess ex-boyfriend, gets out of prison and finding out that Angela is with another dude, he's gonna kill this guy for mooching on his woman.
Yeah.
While he was in jail. True to his word, this guy does kill Emilio. And there is tears, but I really love the way that Michelle really gets back at Robin Bartlett's character. You know, do you want to talk to them about, you know, explain the grieving process to these kids, like this woman is trying to, and Michelle's like, don't patronize me. They know what's going on. You know, should I teach them about like how to knock? What did she say? That she's like, if you don't want to die, remember to knock. Because earlier she really kind of criticizes Courtney B. Vance for not taking Emilio's seriously. You know, I imagine Emilio came to the office earlier that day and said, you know, hey, I'm in trouble, you know?
Yeah, and Courtney B. Vance didn't even let a sentence get out of his mouth and told him to go away because he didn't knock.
And now I think about something like that, I think I wanted that scene to maybe land, have a little bit more of an emotional impact, but no, I think it deals with the reality of the situation. And unfortunately, I think it's true that a lot of these kids in this part of these kids would know what that's like. What have they been teaching her all along?
So I go back and forth on that whole plot point because that is one of the differences from Luann Johnson's memoir, is Emilio was not killed, like he graduated, he's still alive. And it just feels like they needed an extra, it feels like they had building blocks in mind, like they knew that they needed a big emotional climax with the students begging her to stay. But if they were begging her to stay, that means she needed a reason to leave. And that's why Emilio was killed.
Yes.
And so it just feels very formulaic.
Yeah.
In the terms of it, because that's sort of, that really is what we just did backwards, is what happens. Like Emilio is killed. She decides she's not coming back. Students beg her to stay. She stays. So it's like that domino falls and you sort of see why that had to happen, because she has to determine that she's going to leave in order for the film to end the way they wanted it to.
Hollywood. But that's, I even thought about it. That kind of happens in The King and I. If you think about it, she's fed up with the king's treatment of Tuptim and she wants to leave, but then the king is on his deathbed. He dies. Little Princess Ling comes in to gives her a little letter and she decides, take our things off the boat, Louis, we're staying. You know, it's very nice. You know, speaking of formulaic, you know, that's been around.
Your best Deborah Carr impersonation.
Honestly, the role I want to play, if I could play any part in this world, I want to play Mrs. Anna and the King and I.
Really?
Yeah. I think if I would, I'm not saying that a man couldn't play this part one day, you know. The world is changing. Who knows? Would Rodgers and Hammerstein probably roll over in their grave? Probably. But
I support this.
But yeah, that is kind of, I think I even noticed that. I felt that way. I was like, oh, well, kind of, And even felt formulaic that she wanted to leave, but they wanted her to stay. You know, that even felt way. It's like, yeah, of course they wanted to not leave. And of course she is going to stay, because the movie like this can't end with her being like, okay, goodbye, kids. This was great. And credits.
Right. And I guess, not to go back to it, but like Dead Poets Society is a movie that makes me impossibly emotional. And I don't care about that. If you judge me for that.
Like, I saw that movie this year for the first time. I'd never seen it before.
I had only seen very good. Yes, I'd only seen clips of it in high school. And I also watched it like beginning to end for the first time last year. And just cried several times in that movie. And I can't even remember which movie of hers we were discussing, but it was something about the movie knowing the emotions it wants you to feel, but not bringing you there. And that's sort of how I feel about the end of this movie, is that it really wants it. I feel like it wants you to cry when Michelle is getting all emotional, because Raoul is, you know, saying, what about us? Like, you should care about us.
Yeah.
And she's having this conflict of to go or stay. I feel like it does want you to kind of get punched in the feels. And at least for me, it doesn't do that.
No, not like something like Dead Poets Society makes you feel.
Yeah.
I wrote down a lot of teacher movies, because I found a list of kind of the 50 best movies about teachers. And Dangerous Minds came in at number 49. Have you know? So I'm like, all right.
This was a ranked list?
I don't think it was a ranked list. It didn't feel like a ranked list, because some of the ones that were much higher, I'm like, this isn't a perfect movie, but I know it's better than some of this stuff that I'm seeing on this list. But I think of something like the, like Matilda, for example. It's a very different movie, but that kind of teacher-student relationship is very heartfelt and very meaningful.
Yes.
The scenes, again, very different with Precious, with her in the Each One Teach One school, that beautiful Paula Patton. Oh my God.
Very different ladies.
Paula Patton. I'm so sorry, Paula Patton, if you're listening to this. But those beautiful scenes with Paula Patton in her classroom, those make me feel the same way that maybe those kind of get to that level of like a Dead Poet Society.
Absolutely.
This one, definitely on the lower end. I wasn't like you. I wasn't feeling much feelings. I think because it really just hit some of those formulaic spots, and I was like, this, if they're trying to make me feel some way, it's manipulative.
Agreed.
I feel more at The King and I. I feel more feelings at the end of The King and I. You know?
Yeah, I have absolutely seen productions of The King and I that have made me weepy at the end.
Yeah. Would you say Dead Poets Society is one of your favorite teacher movies about a teacher?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That feels right. Certainly of this era.
Mm-hmm.
Teacher movies seem to be a big thing, like end of the 80s to mid late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So of that era, absolutely Dead Poets Society would be my favorite.
Yeah. What about Election? Very different.
Very different kind of movie, but another movie I absolutely love.
Yeah. That was on that list. I was like, ooh, Election. Ooh, that's a teacher movie.
It is a teacher movie, not a teacher movie I would immediately think of, but it is.
Even something like School of Rock.
Great, great example.
I think it even extends to sports, like with Remember the Titans. A big one for me when I was, for some reason, again, my sweet Mr. Thompson in elementary school showed us many inappropriate movies for elementary schoolers, like with Return to Oz and Mr. Holland's Opus. I don't know if we're really quite ready for Mr. Holland's Opus when you're 6 years old.
That's fair.
A big one for me was Freedom Riders in high school.
See, and I still have not seen Freedom Riders.
I would like to watch that again 10 years on and see if it still packs the punch. Because I really thought that, because I went to a performing arts high school, and where it was in our district, where white students were the minority, but I really saw my fellow classmates in that movie. You know, because I was around maybe this environment where I was in very much a suburbia middle class growing up to high school. So going to a high school that was the antithesis of that was really informative for me. And I think knocked down a lot of just internal biases and prejudices that I had growing up. So to kind of see that reflected in a film, that was really like, whoa, really eye-opening. So I would like to see if maybe 10 years on what that movie is like now.
Sure.
Because I know it affected me so much. It became one of my favorite movies, like freshman, sophomore year. Yeah, like, and that and Election. I thought those two movies were like amazing.
I mean, if we're counting Election on this list, then one of my favorite teacher movies is absolutely Notes on a Scandal.
I didn't write that, but that is on the list of the 50 best, that was on that list about the 50 best movies about teachers.
It is not about the best teachers, mind you, but it is a damn good movie that involves teachers.
Oh, yeah. Another one, I have to see Half Nelson with Ryan Gosling.
Half Nelson is great. Half Nelson does correctly what this movie wanted to do.
Interesting. Okay.
No, that was, I feel like Half Nelson had to be one of my first Ryan Gosling, because I feel like I watched Half Nelson before The Notebook, because he got that Best Actor nomination right as I was really getting into seeing as many of them as I could. And yeah, he's great. He's really, really great in that movie.
That's a blind spot for me. That definitely, when I saw that list, I was like, I've got to watch that one. We talked about, but Matilda was also a really big one for me growing up.
Yes.
You know, with reading the book, and that movie is so lovely. And I think, and Beth Davids as Miss Honey, just has to be one of the best teachers that we've ever seen on screen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think through certainly no fault of Michelle's, I think Luann Johnson ranks a little bit lower on my list of favorite teachers in movies.
Yes, it's an odd reconciliation for me watching this movie so late in life, having known about it since I was so young. Like I said, sort of having this movie poster in my head that this has to be a quintessential Michelle Pfeiffer movie. Mm-hmm. And I do think on some level it certainly is. I think it's required viewing because she carries this movie. Like,
yeah.
If you're going to watch a Michelle Pfeiffer movie, this is, by all definitions, a Michelle Pfeiffer movie.
Yes.
But it's not nearly as good as I would want something that feels like quintessential Michelle Pfeiffer viewing to be.
Yeah, because I want it to meet her there at that level. And so many other movies where she is part of a trio or she is a part of an ensemble of actors. It's funny, those movies are the ones that I'm like, those, that's required Michelle viewing. When it's funny, it's when her name is fully above the title, nobody else, it's just her. It is tough to say, you know, I recommend it because you have to, it's just, it's required for you, but I wish it was a little better.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Like, you sort of, for our podcast purposes, this is one you sort of have to recommend, but we have some caveats that goes along with the recommendation.
Yes. Because, I think she does a really great job of really carrying this whole thing and really selling it, because I wonder if another actress's hands, it could have just been maybe a little bit forgettable.
I think there are some actresses where Luann very much could have faded into the background opposite those kids very easily.
And I thought for sure that the kids would also be the scene stealers. Not that they don't have to be, they can But I did wonder, I was like, okay, what kids are we going to be? What kids are going to be the kids? Because sometimes I feel like it becomes their story, right, and not really about the teacher alongside them. It really just becomes their, about their struggles and their journey towards graduation. I think for sometimes, like with Dead Poets Society, as much as Robin Williams is so great in that movie, I do think it becomes about those kids, and that it really becomes their. Would you agree with that? I kind of think that it becomes a little, they at least take a fair portion of the story with them.
I would agree with that, but I also think, and I think that's why that one hits so hard, is it does do such a lovely job of balancing the two.
Sure.
And even though it is telling the story of the teacher and the story of the students, it is also doing a really good job of showing the impact they have on each other as they grow and as they progress.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's difficult to do.
Yeah.
Frankly, especially in a movie that puts a lot of pressure, particularly on the screenwriter, to strike that balance.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that doesn't get there. And I do feel like that's part of this movie. I feel like it really wants to focus on Callie and Raul, but does so in a way that still kind of sidelines them.
Mm-hmm.
The balance is off kilter.
Yep.
Is basically the moral of that story.
And that is tough to do.
But I mean, like we said, if they, you know, this is one of Michelle's movies. This is her production company. This is Via Rosa, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is, you have to assume that so much of this is crafted around her and molded for her. So it does make sense that if you are creating this star vehicle for Michelle Pfeiffer, the balance would be slightly off kilter because you're telling Luann's story. But from the sound of it, it just feels like the balance could have been shifted just a little to give the students just a little more prominence.
Mm-hmm.
I think Raul gets the most. Mm-hmm. Just because I feel like he has the most solo screen time of sort of her three favorites. Mm-hmm. And yet he's still not given enough depth or material for him begging her to stay at the end to land. And that's kind of my barometer.
Yeah, you know, with Emilio, he's kind of the king of the class. Callie, she has the clear view plot point of going to the I guess the pregnant mothers program, and that's her story point. Yeah, I wish there was a given a little bit more to just really explore just a little bit more of each of them. That way we could find a little bit more than just their, you know, couple line description.
And I do have to say that I love Brooklyn Harris's performance as Callie. I think she's such a smart actress because she has less time to herself than some of these other people. In fact, of the three, again, sort of favorite students, I feel like she probably has the least between her, Emilio, and Raul.
Mm-hmm.
But she knows what moments are hers, and she makes them, she sticks the landing every time. And it's a very impressive performance for me. I don't feel like I noticed her quite as much the first watch, and she was a standout for me this time around, especially when Luann is sort of getting situated in the classroom at the beginning, and you can tell Callie's probably always been a quiet girl because she's much smarter than she wants to let on, and just sort of watching her get more comfortable with answering questions and being the smartest person in the room. It's a really subtle and really lovely performance that I thoroughly enjoyed this time around.
Yeah. I loved whenever she would get that chance to really explain to everybody else, you know, what these lines mean and what, yeah, just that really wonderful potential that you just see in her eye. And you just really understand why Luann is just going up to bat for her like she does. I think that's really, she to me feels like the one, it's like, yeah, that's the student that she really just like, come on, like, I'm really fighting for you here because you have so much potential. You're so smart. More so than I think Raul or Emilio. I think she's really the one that she's like, Callie feels like the hope. The really big hope. Would we have nominated Michelle for this performance in any way, shape, or form? No?
No.
No, I probably wouldn't.
It even surprised me how low down on my ranking this performance is. Because it was one of those that I kind of thought would be upper middle.
Yeah.
And then as I sort of kept scrolling down, I was just like, no, I liked this one better and this one better and this, and it just kept getting lower and lower. So I think it's smack in the middle.
I think mine is in the middle. It's like number 15.
Oh, mine's lower. I think it's like 21.
Oh, okay. Now that I think about it, I'm like, I think I did like Lovefield, which is a V-Strick, Cherie, Up Close and Personal more than Dangerous Minds. That's the one it's above. So I'm like, oh. Yeah. But again, it feels kind of like really, this is her movie. It feels kind of like, maybe that's the point we're making where it's like,
it's difficult to reconcile.
I feel like it should be higher in her ranking. This is her top bill movie. Why am I wanting to make this lower? Oh,
yeah. But I mean, she won the Blockbuster Entertainment Award for Favorite Actress Drama. She was up for an MTV Movie Award for Best Female Performance and Most Desirable Female.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of awards, it was really the Gangsta's Paradise track off the soundtrack that took off. Nominated for Record of the Year, won for Best Rap Solo Performance, the VMAs, like won Best Rap Video and Best Video from a Film, like big deal in the zeitgeist.
I know, it's funny, when that first song first began, I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I've heard this song before. And it's like, I did not realize that song came from this movie, but I was like, oh, I've heard these opening lines before.
I would be interested to see if she could have landed a Globe nomination for drama in a weaker field.
Mm-hmm.
But in 95, the five drama actresses nominated were the exact same five that
the Oscars
that went to get the Oscar nomination. So it's like, especially for a performance that I don't feel very passionate about and I don't think is one of her best, it's very hard for me to think there was any possibility.
What is that lineup? Do you want to give it to us?
Yes. Lineup is, let me make sure I don't miss anybody. So it was Sharon Stone and Casino that won the Globe.
Yep.
Then we have Susan Sarandon and Dead Man Walking, who went on to win the Oscar.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Shue and Leaving Las Vegas.
Mm.
Meryl Streep and Bridges of Madison County. Mm. And Emma Thompson and Sense and Sensibility. So unimpeachable lineup.
Yeah. No one's getting in there, honey.
Yeah. That's... nor should they. I mean, that's a fantastic lineup.
Yeah. I wouldn't nominate her for this one.
But I did think it was very interesting. For some reason, I thought that at worst, this would have got like middling reviews.
Yeah.
It was not particularly well received.
Really?
Critically. It's 29% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Because like, I remember it was a big financial hit, wasn't it?
It was. It was the biggest financial success of the Via Rosa movies. And I mean, it was the 11th top grossing movie of the year. And, you know, box office, it was $179.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
So critics aside, like this, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
This movie. And I feel like you know, the only one before this one for Via Rosa had been Love Field, which, as we discussed at length, had sort of a tortured release. And then 3 years later, we get this one, which just does gangbusters at the box office and kind of solidifies her actress hyphen producer credit. Because then we get One Fine Day directly after, Thousand Acres, which we have coming up very soon, our favorite Deep End of the Ocean, and Original Sin, which, as we talked, for Deep End of the Ocean was the only one not starring Michelle. But none of the ones after this one kind of had the same financial or cultural impact that this one did.
And I think the success of this one must have just kept the ball rolling for that production company to be able to keep on, because I don't think we would have had the wonderful thing that is One Fine Day without the success of Dangerous Minds. So,
and it sort of stays in keeping with, I guess you would call it sort of the mission statement. I actually think One Fine Day is the only one that sort of steps out of that mold in terms of it being very much a rom-com, but a movie about a strong woman, or in, you know, Thousand Acres with her and Jessica Lange, strong women, but just very female forward movies, which is fucking awesome. We need more of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And she led the way for so many, I think, whether she knew it, she was going to do this or not, but you know, led the way for so many, these female producing teams, you know, with, you know, Reese Witherspoon now with all that she's doing. Michelle, in her own way, paved that way for what we're seeing now. These are like women making things for women, by women, you know, all that stuff.
And so simplistic, but I do think it speaks volumes that some 8-year-old kid remembers this movie poster. How many years later? It's like, that was like, without even having seen it, that was my first Michelle Pfeiffer movie, because I didn't know who she was, but I knew that poster.
So yeah, that's got to mean something at the end of the day.
Do we have anything more for Le Dangerous Minds?
Le Dangerous Minds. Le Minds.
Le Minds Dangereuses.
I really want to know why they call it Dangerous Minds.
Same. I should say same. Apparently when it was being made, they did stick with the title of Luann Johnson's autobiography, which was My Posse Don't Do Homework. And then at some point the title got swapped. But yeah, I would be curious myself, because it doesn't, I don't know that it necessarily fits the brief overall.
Although I would have loved to, we see a title, you know, between Wolf and One Fine Day, you know, My Posse Don't Do Homework, starring Michelle Pfeiffer. I'd love that.
Right?
That's catching my eye more than Dangerous Minds. I would love to know what the impact would have been if you had seen that title at Blockbuster.
I'd remember it. I can tell you that much.
Yeah. Instead of just her on the poster, you'd remember every.
Yeah, all of it.
Yep. So I guess if that's all we've got about Dangerous Minds, it's time for 6 Degrees of Michelle Pfeiffer.
Hashtag tiz.
Hashtag tiz. And 6 Degrees is the game we play to wrap up each episode, where we each give each other the name of an actor or actress and connect them to Michelle's filmography in 6 people or less. Jerry, would you like to give or receive first?
I will give first.
All right.
So much like you, I sort of had teachers on the brain. And I don't think we've...
Teacher's pet, if you will.
I don't think we've done this person yet, but I'm giving you the piano teacher herself, Isabelle Huppert.
Speaking of teachers, that's a teacher movie we didn't talk about. But speaking of teachers, Isabelle Huppert. I can't remember the name of this darn movie that she did with Marissa Tomei. Can't think of it. But I do know that Isabel did the camp classic Greta with Chloe Grace Moretz, yes, who was in Dark Shadows with Miss Michelle.
Yeah. I was waiting for you to either go Greta or I Heart Huckabees. I figured those were going to be like the easiest stepping stones, but I'm glad you went with Greta.
Because I could have gotten there with, if I could just remember that Marissa Tomei movie.
Frankie?
Is that it? I knew it was like, is it Frank? Frank, huh? I think it's like Frankie. For some time, I just thought it was like Frank. Like, that's what it was in my head. It was probably, I think it's Frankie. But I'm still sticking with Greta.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
So mine for you is, I should have gone with the teacher route, but I didn't. I went with Lucy Liu.
Oh my, okay. Okay. Michelle is in the other dangerous movie, Dangerous Liaisons, with Uma Thurman, who is in Kill Bill Volume 1. With a badass Miss Lucy Liu.
I was thinking you could also do, I thought it was like, oh, there's such an easy one with Renee Zellweger and White Oleander. And Lucy Liu was Go to Hell Kitty in Chicago.
She was. Always start with White Oleander.
I know.
We've learned anything.
I know. I'm like, let's think about a woman in White Oleander. Ah, I've got it. You would think, I've done this outro so many times by now, you would think I'd have it memorized, but.
Let me go through my notes, if you please.
Outro, colon. Well, Pfeiffer fans, this has been another episode of Pfeiffer Fridays. I'm Michael McLean, and you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at Michael D. McLean.
And I'm Jerry Downey, and you can follow me on Twitter and Letterboxd at JerryDowney913.
Please remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It makes us easier to find so we can continue to spread the Michelle gospel. You can also find updates about the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Pfeiffer Fridays. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you again next week for Pfeiffer Fridays.
Man, you come and live in my neighborhood for 1 week, and then you tell me if you got a choice.
But there are a lot of people who live in your neighborhood who choose not to get on that bus. What do they choose to do? They choose to go out and sell drugs. They choose to go out and kill people. They choose to do a lot of other things, but they choose not to get on that bus. The people who choose to get on that bus, which are you, are the people who are saying, I will not carry myself down to die. When I go to my grave, my head will be high. That is a choice.